Ladies and gentlemen, it's your boy Chef Plum. Welcome to Plum Love Foods Live. We'll go live here and hit the crazy music in a second, but I want to say thank you for all the downloads, all the interest, all the messages we've gotten recently. The show has been in the top 10, I think almost top 5, but I'll say top 10, at least since I've been keeping track of here for the past 3 weeks. That's all because of you guys. So thank you so much. We really, really appreciate that. Let's get the show started. It's going to be a great one tonight.
If you just shut the fuck up for 30 seconds, you might learn something.
Monday night. Oh, there's Robbie right away. He's not even waiting for his intro. He's going to chime right in there. What's happening, Robbie? Happy Monday night to you. Welcome. Plum Love Foods Live. It's your boy, Chef Plum, coming at you live from the studio apartment. No, it's not really an apartment. It's studio basement, Robbie. Can we call it the studio basement? Is that cool? Thanks. That makes me feel great about myself. I appreciate that. Here in my mom's basement, having a great time. That's what we're doing. Right? Farting on, Garth. I'm with you. Yeah, man, hanging out. It's a Monday night. I'm happy to be here, man. It's going to be a great show. Oh, shit. You know what? There you go. Now I got you. All that. I had you muted, so no one heard you say any of that but me. That's fine. Robbie's been talking to me for the past 10 seconds, but I had it muted. Anyway, joined tonight, Chef Rob Prado is hanging out with me. He just said party on, Wayne, because we're in mom's basement. Let's try that again. Robbie, how are you, buddy?
I'm awesome, Chef. How are you?
I am well, man. Honestly, I gotta tell you what, man. You've kind of been coming on this this program for a long time now, and doing a fantastic job on the co-hosting, brother. So, you know, shout out to you there.
Thank you very much, sir.
You know what I'm worried about is going to happen is that Dave is going to show back up and be very angry at you one of these days.
Well, I think what do we have? We have that tonight, right?
Yes, that's right. Well, possibly. I mean, you ruined the gimmick there. I was about to play his intro music and then bring him on and be like, oh no. Two men enter, one man leaves, but you fucked it all up.
Yeah, that's what I'm here for.
Oh, there it is. There's Best Around. That can only mean one thing. It's got to be Chef Dave is joining us, a.k.a. Dave Borda. Dave, buddy.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Where you been, man?
Here and there.
What are you doing? We've missed you. We've had you. Robbie's jumped in. He's grabbed the bull by the proverbial horns and done a fantastic job. I think he has. You've heard it, right? You even said he did a good job.
Yeah, he did a pretty good job.
Pretty good. I like how Dave says he did a pretty good job.
It just, you know, it's all right.
Here's what I love. Yeah. I love the fact that this program now has a bullpen. That makes me happy.
You're getting there.
That's what it is. That's what it is. Well, guys, listen, it's going to be a great night. And you know, I started the show off by saying in the pre-intro there, talking all about the recent ratings that have been happening on iTunes and the iTunes food category, and of course on the iTunes arts category. Again, last week's episode, guys, we were again top 5. Can you believe that? Like, this stupid little program where I sit here and drink terrible bad drinks and make dick jokes with you jackasses is in the top 5.
Nice.
Never underestimate the power of the dick joke.
I think I'd agree with that, right? I mean, but it's been great, man. Seriously, the feedback's been phenomenal. And it really makes me think that we should try to do something different with this program or maybe get, like, a paid sponsor. That might be good, besides what is in the intro.
Yeah. That would cash moves everything around me.
Cream, right?
Dollar dollar bills.
Yeah, I was in my brain going, Dave, say dollar dollar bills, say dollar dollar bills. You did it. I'm proud of you. That was good. That was good. Dave, what's going on with you, man? You guys have been. You told me the night you guys did 600 covers. That's insane.
Yeah, that was Saturday night, I think. Yeah, Saturday night. We had Mark Anthony showing 600 covers.
Wow.
Mark Anthony, the dude who was married to Jessica's...
J-Lo.
J-Lo, that's right. J-Lo. Right?
Yeah, but like what I remember him from is the movie The Substitute.
Wait, he was in that movie?
Yeah, he was like the gang's leader.
For real?
Yeah, he's the one who got his finger cut off.
Wow. I mean, your memory is unmatched. That's incredible. I didn't know that. Did you know that,
Jim? Yeah.
Rob, did you know that?
I did not know that. Oh. He doesn't strike me as a gang leader.
Oh, does he drink wine in that show or no?
No. Just watch it again. It's a pretty good movie.
Dave, you missed a segue there. I was trying to get to wine.
Oh, yeah. He drank a ton of wine.
Nice. Rob, did you pick up on the segue or no?
Yeah, I did.
Okay,
I did. I'm sorry. I didn't know where to go with it from the whole no thing. I was like, oh, okay. That's,
it was, you really threw us there with the no.
That's all right. Crashed and burned.
Hey, just really quick. we'll take a side note to update everybody. We are still in talks with the U.S. Navy. I am now waiting to hear back from them on a couple of questions I asked, but I do believe this is going to happen, so I'm very excited.
Nice.
I mean, I think we should all be excited about that.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited.
I'm pumped, man.
Here's the thing. When you talk to both of you fuckers, you'd never know you're excited. Because listen to you. Dave goes, yeah, I'm pretty excited. And Robbie goes, yeah, I'm pumped.
you cut me off, man.
Did I?
And now I don't know when to talk. Or do I talk? Do you talk? Do I talk? I'm not really sure. Yeah.
That's my day-to-day. You can never really tell when I'm excited.
No, man, we're going to, you know, the fact that we get to give back to, you know, our servicemen in doing the thing that we love and getting to do it for them is amazing.
That's where it's at, right?
And it's going to be a good time, and I feel like we just can't go wrong.
Right. Well, you know, I wonder if guys in the Navy, what do you guys know about wine? Are you guys wine guys? Rob, I think you are, aren't you?
Yeah, I drink some wine here and there. Who doesn't love grape juice?
Oh, Jesus. Dave, what about you? Are you a wine guy?
From time to time. Like, I don't really know much about it, but I'll drink it.
Well, it's actually one of those things that in culinary school, and Rob, you and I went through the same program, I had no idea it was so intense and so in-depth until I was in my wines class at CIA, the Culinary Institute of America. But after being in that program, I kind of fell in love with it, and just what I learned about wine was incredible, and it became actually probably one of my preferred things to drink after beer. But I think they kind of fall in the same categories, being able to taste different things, as, you know, in wine as well as in beer. But with the holidays coming up, there's going to be quite the bit of wine drinking. Rob, do you guys do wine during the holidays, or do you guys do beer, or what do you guys do?
We drink a ton of wine.
Yeah. So your wine, red, white, does it matter, or?
I don't have as many preferences. You know, as long as it's good, I'll drink it. I would say we probably lean a little bit harder to red, especially around the holidays. And as it gets colder, you know, we drink more, more rosés and sparkling wines, white wines in the summer.
Dude, I love sparkling. Though. Sparkling is awesome. And Dave, are you ever a wine guy? Has there ever been a wine guy in your life? Or,
I mean, yeah, there's probably like a few years of drinking wine. So I bounce back and forth just depending on the time of year.
Well, maybe tonight's conversation might help change some of that. We got a good buddy of mine on tonight, and the guy I love talking to. His family here locally where I live, they own, in Connecticut, they own 5 wine shops, and they do a fantastic job. The difference that these guys have compared to what, you know, your regular wine store is, when you walk in the door, they acknowledge you, they talk to you, they remember the things you like, they're professional, but more importantly, they know what they're selling, they understand, they know what they've got going on as far as product goes. And one of the guys that I met at first was this gentleman named G, who's going to be on the program this evening. G is not only a fantastic talker, but just a really, really humble, nice guy who, beneath that entire exterior, is a madman when it comes to wine. His understanding of it is out of control in what he knows about wine. So having him on the show tonight is very cool. It's a pleasure to have him on. Ladies and gentlemen, please say hello to the wine slinger himself, my good friend G. Patel. G, good evening, brother. How are you?
What's up, chefs? How we doing?
It's plural, right?
Yeah, there's more than one of you. I feel outnumbered. But you know what? One guy to three chefs. I think that's good math.
It's definitely a website somewhere, I think. I'm worried about that.
Oh, God.
That's terrible. That's just awful.
It sounds like a bad movie.
It certainly does. It certainly does. And so, you know, you hear the banter with these guys and talking about wine, G. So what is it when people come in? You know, is there like a stigma to it? Is there like a... I got to turn this damn texting off from my computer. I don't know why it keeps coming up. Stop.
You also got to answer your door. I think I heard the doorbell go off.
But when people come in the door and they say, oh, you know, I'm a red wine drinker, I'm a white wine drinker, you know, what's the first thing you say? Do you try to foster that, or do you try to get someone to kind of come out of their shell a little bit?
No, first thing, man, I mean, you never want somebody to go too far out of their comfort zone, right? I feel like all of our experiences, just, you know, think about it from this perspective. As an individual, whether you're driving a car or whether you're, you know, you're learning how to use a knife, I mean, small incremental improvements or adjustments to what it is and how you're doing it are going to be what help make you understand more, do better, and appreciate things more. So if someone comes in and says to me, hey, you know, I really like big, fat, full-bodied Chardonnay that's got tons of oak on it, well, you know, my personal preference doesn't sit with that style of wine drinking it on a regular basis. But what I would say to that customer is, oh, well, knowing that you like that, I tell you what, I've got a couple of Chardonnays I'd like to recommend to you, and I might try and encourage that they go with something that's got a little more acidity that helps make their mouth salivate a little more. Just to change up what it is that they're consuming and or bring them to another part of the world to experience Chardonnay in a different way, but never in a way to say that it's greater than or going to replace what they're consuming, but much more of a way to say, hey, open your eyes, the world's big.
Do you ever get tired of talking about wine, man? Because you're so good at it. Like you've been talking wine all day. I know you close the store, then you jump around the horn here with us. Do you ever get tired of talking about it?
No, I mean, really, only when I've had too much of it, because at that point, I don't want to talk.
I just want to say that I've seen that, and between you and your brother, let's just say that I'm glad we're friends, because I don't know where that would go. Like, you're very scary.
We've done some damage. We've done some damage. That we have. That we have.
Listen, so I don't know how to start this conversation, man, because I have so many questions. I'm trying to figure out the best way to give it some direction and drive the bus, but... how did you end up getting – let's start with this, man. So you're actually a sommelier. How did that happen, and how was that test for you?
So it was fun. You know, I grew up basically in my mother and father's wine store. And I saw my father, who's this really sharp, like charismatic character. My mother also very charismatic, great with people. And, you know, you kind of learn some innate skills, right? Just like how to smile and treat people good when you've got those two people teaching you. And – what I really learned from my mother is her ability to just connect with what people are liking. And she did so with a very elementary understanding of wine. And from that elementary understanding, she built on it. And so I got to see her kind of learn wine as an adult, which, let's face it, when you're young and, you know, you're a kid, you've got no pressure. You don't have to worry about hitting a mortgage or, you know, getting to work on time or any of the stresses that come with adult life. And so I'm seeing what my mom's trying to do to learn more so she can explain wine better. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, well, if she's reading this, maybe I can read it too. And while I'm hanging around on the store floor, I can help out. And this was when I was about, you know, 16, 17 years old, really soaking in a lot of verbal knowledge or read knowledge, nothing where I've actually gone out and executed and actually tasted a ton of wine. But I would taste with her. And at some point in time around 19, maybe 20, I was tasting a ton of wine with her. And, you know, a lot of these, you know, it's a sales industry, right? So you come into my store, what's my goal? I want to sell you something. No doubt about it. I want to sell you something. That's why I'm in business. That's how I pay my rent. And that's how I put dinner on the table. But sure, I'll never be able to sell you something once and pay my bills. I got to have you coming back to me. And so when I was so young, I'd get people coming into the store and say to me, you know, it would be twofold. It'd be from the consumer-facing side of things where they'd say, look at this guy. He's fucking 10 years old trying to recommend some wine to me. What does he know about wine? What, like, I want a $25 bottle of Cabernet.
Should we call the police? Like, I mean, this kid, he's a kid. What's happening
at
home?
You're like a Doogie Howser of wine.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, I literally, and, you know, I was definitely big into gangster rap way back in the day. So I'm hanging around in the store. I got, like, baggy jeans and, you know, oversized T-shirts. I mean, I looked like I was going to steal your car more than I was going to recommend a bottle of wine to you.
I still do, by the way. I'm kidding.
I still had to find a way to encourage these folks that, number one, I know what I'm talking about, but, you know, and I'm not going to lead you astray. And for me, it was being able to say that I was certified. At the same time, on the other side of things, from suppliers, man, you guys are in a business setting, right? There's people that want to sell you shit all the time.
For sure.
And that's definitely the case for the liquor industry. These guys, these are sales reps coming in from different wine companies, and they range from having really cool boutique artisanal products that are overpriced to being all those things and a tremendous value. And then you've also got in the fray overproduced commercial crap that's just meant to get, you know, 90% of the market really excited about a Chardonnay that has got, you know, a cute label on it, and it's priced at $9.99, and therefore people are going to buy it. And they've, you know, they kind of checked all the formulaic boxes that tell them that this is going to be a success. So, you know, those guys are coming in and telling me shit like, "Oh, you're amazing. You're one of the most wine knowledgeable people I've ever met." And, you know, truth be told, my knowledge is very good, but am I that good at that age? No, I definitely wasn't. But they're trying to sell me something. So I said, you know what? What's the best way for me to go out? Number one, see if I am any good and whether I do have a talent for this thing called wine. But number two, go out and be able to prove to my customers that, you know what, I'm here for you. I want you to love everything that I'm recommending to you. And that's not to say that my tastes are exactly yours, but I'm going to do my best to fully understand what it is you like, what you appreciate. And from there, build your journey in wine. And
how hard is the test?
It's pretty hard. I mean, the test I took, you know, you had to do two wines blind and you had to go through the process. And what they're really testing you on is not necessarily your end result. Like, you guessed that this is a New World Sauvignon Blanc from the 2015 vintage. And you're guessing that it's coming in from Napa and it goes for around $25. They're looking for how did you come to that conclusion? They want to see, what did you observe visually with the wine, right? What was your aromatic assessment of the wine? What were the smells that you got from it? And from there, what did you observe on the palate? And then from there, you have to show that you did the math to come to your reasoning. Because some guys, I mean, I'll be honest with you, some wines too are so automatic. You smell it and you're like, oh yeah, this is New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc, or you know, this is a Malbec from Argentina. But you got to show why, right? Like, so when you were a kid in math, show your work. You have to show your work, and that's how you pass the blind tasting. And then from there, it was 100 questions that you had to get at least 75 on to pass. And I'm not bragging or anything, but I ended up getting 100% on the test.
Oh, shit. Okay. Now, there's different levels, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. And so, you know, for me, as I was kind of, you know, the preface to all of this was that I just wanted to see whether I actually knew anything. And you guys are, you know, you guys are chefs. You guys are in a restaurant. You guys are in an insane industry that works very fast paced, that will chew you up and spit you out if you're not absolutely great at what you do. And so for me, like, I was never, ever, ever focused on wanting to be in the restaurant industry. Why? Because I'm in retail. I've got wine stores and sommeliers you always associate with restaurants. So I said, let me go in, let me take this test, let me see if I'm good. And if I'm good, then I know I'm good, and I know I got something I can build off of and turn this into a serious career for me. And I did this back in, I think it was 2006, so I was 23 years old when I took the test and ended up passing. And then from there, you know, I got asked to come back and join the place where I got certified was the Sommelier Society of America. They asked me to join and actually really help push the agenda. And, you know, the guy that really taught my course, who I learned a ton from, was actually a candidate for Master Somm and was going through that program. And he was telling me I should go out and try the advanced course from the Court of Masters and really push the envelope. And, you know, I just said to him, I really just wanted to see if I knew what the hell I was talking about.
I think you definitely do. Rob, how often is it you see, man? I mean, think about it. You and I have been in this business about the same amount of time, man. How often is it you go to a wine shop and they actually have a sommelier that works there?
Never. They usually go with young girl who needs job or really old lady who likes to drink wine.
Which is, I know it's your preference, but you walk into Bottle Stop and G's there and he shakes your hand. Like, I go in to see G. I know it's going to be a half-hour affair. But the difference, though, that I think is amazing about this, about what they do, brother, is that, you know, and this is, I'm not doing a commercial for Bottle Stop here, but, like, what it is, when I go to that store, like, I told you the same thing, G. It was like, listen, I'm going to Bottle Stop to buy my wine, or which isn't probably a good thing to say, but it was more like, let me go talk to G and grab a bottle of wine. That's what it was. I was coming to see you, you know, and that's the thing that I think that you are trying so hard to teach other people, and we'll get into having help in stores and things like that from a business standpoint, of course. Dave, can you do a little plug for G here, man? I want to see what you got and see if you can get something out there for him, because we've been talking to him for a few minutes now and haven't said shit about, you know, where he is and what he does and stuff.
Let's see what you got, no problem. Tonight on the show, we have G Patel. He's a owner of Bottle Stop Wine and Spirits. You can check him out on Instagram at GP Wineslinger.
There you go. There you go. That's on the Instagram. And G, that's where it's at on Instagram. Listen, we'll talk a little bit of wine and food pairings here in a second, but I wanted to ask you, man, when it comes down to it, because we talked to everybody on this show from different industries from all over the place, and recently we had Rev Ciancio on, who is a marketing genius on this program, and we talk a whole Amen. Lot about social media being a big marketing tool. Do you guys use that a lot? Do you find that helpful in your business?
Yeah, so you know what, social media is certainly important, and you know, I'm you know, you talk about marketing and what's important for my business. I always found that, you know, to me, direct response is what really gets everything rolling. And so the difference between social media and direct response is that I put forward, you know, a group set of information and or a body of work that then asks a customer to either take an action or walk away from an action. So for us, the biggest thing is our email list. So, you know, we get people into our ecosystem and familiar with who we are via social media. So we put out content that will educate and kind of inform, because you guys know just as well as I do, right? If people stop thinking about the food they eat, then there's no need for chefs, right? So if people are a little more considerate, a little more thoughtful, even if they're just a hair more considerate about what they're putting in their glass, then they're going to find that there's a difference between my stores and the average package store, if you will. Yeah. So, you know, they're going to become aware of me and my stores and my family and our existence through social media. And as they kind of dig deeper in the rabbit hole, they're going to find themselves tied more than likely tied into the email marketing that we do. And that's, you know, for me, the biggest part, because we do a ton of events where we get people to come into the store, pour them a bunch of wine, talk to them about either a concept or a theme. Like, you know, in another couple of weeks, we've got a port class. Why? Because let's face it, man, everyone says that they like tasting port when you give them a glass because it's big, full bodied, usually sweet. Like, who doesn't like that? It's like eating chocolate, right? Like, you got to be a Nazi to not like chocolate. Everybody loves fucking port. You just got to give it to them.
Right.
But
that's so true, man.
So, but they don't know what to do with it, right? It's like you've got this great bottle of port and you just don't know what to do with it. So I thought, you know what? What better way than to encourage people to enjoy port more regularly than to pop a few bottles, bring them through the whole experience, let them understand what the different styles are, maybe pair it with some stuff, you know what I mean?
And what an amazing thing to have for holiday time. Sorry, Robbie, go ahead. I know you were trying to jump in. I keep interrupting you, brother.
No, I think that's a wonderful idea. I mean, I feel like I only drink port after I've drank too much other wine.
That's so true.
Yeah, that's a wise move because it's so high in alcohol. That's what you need.
Well, you know,
drinking wine all night. Port, yeah. Port to close me out.
Well, no, you know, it's normally after, you know, like I go into the city, I visit a chef friend, sit down, do the tasting menu, everything's paired. And then, you know, all of a sudden, and you're so right, you don't need it. It's literally overkill. But it's one of those things that we always finish with. And, you know, I would never go and buy, you know, a bottle of port. But yet every fine meal I can think of as unreflecting, you know, I've ended it with a port. And to bring that knowledge to, you know, maybe guys that aren't getting the same experience in the restaurants with those, you know, 14 course, you know, dinners in Manhattan to get people knowing, you know, what they can do with it and how to introduce it into the home is definitely a cool experience.
That's a damn good point. Yeah, for sure. That's a damn good point right there. And honestly, like, when it comes to a port, I mean, gee, are there ports that aren't $80? Are there ports that are, like reasonably priced that you could get and maybe have a glass of port on a Wednesday night before bed sort of thing?
Yeah, for sure. And that's actually where I was going to go. What's this, especially up here in New England, right? Like, I know you guys, I know you have a huge audience here that's, you know, they could be listening in Florida or up in, you know, Alaska for all we know. But
that'd be dope.
You know, as it gets colder, I mean, I don't know. I think of like just that sweet tooth individual, and there's a ton of us out there where you want like a cookie or just something like sweet before you go to bed. I'll give myself a half an ounce or two, you know, an ounce of port as just a way to close out the night. That is my dessert, right? The dessert wine is the dessert.
All right. The next time I'm in your store, remind me to buy a bottle of port. Last night, and this is like a therapy meeting for me, I had 9 Reese cups before bed. I'm just saying. It was the little ones, but I had 9 of them. The little ones.
That's awesome. This 9, I thought they come 2 in a pack, dude. What are you doing? Did you leave one out?
It was the little ones, the little, like, you know, the holiday, like, foil
wrapper
ones. Oh,
yeah, yeah, the Halloween ones. Yeah,
if there was, trust me, if there was more, I would have eaten them. I had 9 of them, and maybe a little bit of port would have been a better choice for myself. That's all I'm saying.
Well, you know what you do is you have 4 of those Reese's things and, like, 2 ounces of port, and then you call it even.
Oh, fuck, that's what's up right there. Dave, are you ever had port, Dave? Are you
Why
a port
compromise?
Guy?
Why compromise?
Yeah, right?
Dave, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Have you ever had port, dude? Is port ever a thing for you?
Yeah, I actually like port. You actually made fun of me a couple episodes ago where I mentioned, you're like, oh, what do you drink on the beach? I was like, well, I've done port wine a couple times. And you're like, on the beach?
All right, well, gee, come on, back me up. You don't drink port on the fucking beach. That's crazy talk.
That's pretty obnoxious shit right there. But, hey, ignorance is bliss, too, right? If you're having fun, who's to say no?
Gee, I mean, wouldn't you say, I mean, it kind of goes with what you said earlier. I mean, if that's what people are drinking and that's their thing, I mean, you know, I've been asked, I'm definitely, you know, I passed my wines course to graduate CIA, probably by the skin of my teeth.
Me too.
And, you know, I do.
It's fucking hard,
really,
dude. That course is hard. Sorry. That course is fucking hard, dude. That course is no joke. Dude. They made us drink. Gee, we got to class at 7 a.m., The fucking jackass instructors, who I'm thankful for these days, but back then, they made us taste. Robbie, was the same for you? 7 o'clock.
Yeah,
we're tasting first, and then we're going to lecture. Oh, and P.S., Michael Weiss was my instructor, who's a master sommelier. He said, listen, you can't really taste it, fully taste it, unless you swallow it, but I can't tell you to swallow it. He's like, I'm just giving you that information right now for you.
I had the other guy.
7 o'clock in the morning, drinking wine. That's what I do on Mondays. That's what I was doing this morning.
Yeah, but 7 o'clock in the morning, drinking wine, drinking like 30 wines, and then
they lecture for 2 hours, and then you got to go home and read 9 chapters.
Oh,
you're hammered.
God, I had to go to work. Then I hated my life so much. Then oh fuck,
dude, that's why you got to do it when you're young. You got the energy, man. You can burn the candle at both ends like that.
It was fucking terrible. Oh my god. So gee, go ahead. No, please go ahead.
Well, I was going to say is 2 things. I didn't necessarily address your question, but like, you don't have to spend an arm and a leg on port, man. You could spend $20 on a good bottle of port. And, you know, the truth is that so long as you understand that you don't have to spend a ton of money on pretty much anything when it comes to wine, you don't have to spend a boatload of cash to drink good.
Yeah.
Now, don't get me wrong. There's plenty of ways to spend plenty of good money, and you're going to drink like a rock star. And that's fun. That's a ton of fun. But it's not a necessity. You could drink really good for very reasonable prices. And that's a lot of what we try and focus in on. I think that there's a fun part of the wine world that exists, say, between $12 and $25 that you could drink world-class wine that's just prime examples of place, people, style, authenticity. You know, it's really not that much more. When you consider that the average American is probably coming in to spend $10 on a bottle of wine, right, you're talking about spending a couple bucks more to drink something that's a little more authentic. That's not a huge leap of faith.
Well,
go ahead, no, Rob. Go ahead, Rob. You go ahead.
Do you go by makers and vineyards or like wine houses? Like, what's your like go to? You know, middle of the road. You know, Tuesday night, guy comes in, wants to bring wine home to his wife. Like, what would be your go-to, Do you go by vineyard? Do you go by region?
Is it a taste thing for you? Like, hey, I know this guy. I know what his tastes are. I know what he normally buys. Is it that sort of thing?
Well, so it's a combination of both things, right? So first things first, you always try and tailor your recommendation to the customer's preferences. So you try and suss out some of that stuff. Like you know, what is it that you prefer to drink? Can you give me some examples that you've had before? But if we were just shooting from the cuff and you said to me, none of that stuff matters, where do you want to get a bottle of wine from?
I mean, I can give you – so a guy walks in. He likes, you know, cab, you know. Isn't an outrageous, you know, isn't over, you know, he just wants a $15 to $20 bottle of wine.
Well, so that's actually a good price point for some wine. So believe it or not, you can in California, especially Washington State, actually West Coast in general, California's got some good wines in that price point, but Washington State is on fire. And I'd probably, if he said to me, hey, look, I like cabs, you know, I want to spend between 15 and 20. I'd go straight to Washington State and say, here, try this and come back to me in the morning and tell me how much I loved it, because I know it's going to rock your world. But if somebody was saying to me, hey, it's Tuesday night, I don't want to spend more than $15. I'm going to say, stay the hell out of California, because, you know, there's not a ton going on, in my opinion, that really tastes, you know, two things, authentic or down to earth, like just delicious, right? Like it's all made to market, in my opinion, mm-hmm. right? Like it to me, it's like, you know, Nike cranking out socks. They know that the sock is going to fit. They know the sock does what it needs to do. They figured out the formula, and then now they just crank them out. I'd rather go to a small producer in, say, Spain, and say to that customer, all right, look, I get it. You like full-bodied reds because that's what you're telling me when you say you like cab. You want something that's got a lot of good forward fruit to it because you're telling me you drink California Cabernet. I'm going to give you a full-bodied red from Spain that's maybe a blend of Monastrell and a touch of Cabernet that's got some good fruit to it, but no, I'm wait, also
just,
not going to...
Gee, I want to stop you really quick just so people who don't understand, just so we can clarify. You said Monastrell and Cabernet. What are those? I know what they are, and I'm just saying, like, explain to people what that is when you say that. What are
Dave,
those things?
Dave, what are those?
So Monastrell is like this. Monastrell and Mourvedre are the same exact grape varietal.
Those are grapes.
Yeah, exactly. Monastrell is a grape varietal. They call it Monastrell in Spain. If you're in any other part of the world, they're going to call it Mourvedre. It's very popular in France, and obviously they're in the Mediterranean, the south of France. So if you're in the Rhone Valley in the Mediterranean, south of France, moving all the way across and over into Spain, you're going to find that that's the whole band or area where Mourvedre or Monastrell grows really well.
Fuck,
and
why? I feel like I'm back in wines class. Fuck. Jesus Christ. Oh, my God. Yeah,
I'm sorry. Hopefully your eyes aren't rolling over to the back of your head.
Maybe a little.
But so Monastrell, big, full-bodied, jammy, juicy, spicy, earthy. Mm-hmm. Throw in some Cabernet, adds a little more tannin and more structure to it, and you get it from a hot part of the world. Guess what that means, man? That equals a nice, juicy, jammy red with some earth, some spice, and a little bit of funk. And guess what? This person now will get, appreciate, and understand the fruit. Hopefully the spice, the earth, and the funk grows on them, and they're going to come back and be like, holy shit, mind blown. I need to drink more wines like that.
That was amazing. That was amazing right there.
I had a very similar situation to that. I was kind of over all of the Jordans and all those like mass-produced California wines. And I had some friends visit Chile, and they brought back, you know, everything you just described, but from Chile. And it totally like rebooted my wine preferences and where I was going with stuff with my wine drinking.
Well, so that's just it. I always look to, if you want value, look to new places, man. You can't touch Napa Valley for under $30 now. I mean, if you do grab Napa Valley for under $30, you're hoping that you get lucky, and you're hoping that it's going to stay there. Because most of these guys, they launch a $30 bottle of Napa Cabernet, and in 2 years, they're hoping to get to $40 on the shelf. So they're just looking to suck you in, get you going, and then boom, kick up the brand and push up the price. And that's essentially the way, again, the business side of the wine world works. Whereas you go to some of these other parts, like you're saying, Chile, South America, boom, huge values. You head down there, you're in Chile, Carmenere, you're talking about Cabernet, Bordeaux varietals. I mean, these guys do it as good as anyone else can, but for a lot less.
Uh-huh. Man, it's so crazy when you just, I mean, the way you describe wine to people, like, that's something that I think that is lacking when it comes to the wine selling world, which is, again, is why I was, you know, expressing to you when we were talking about, you know, I'd come to see G because that's where I want to go to buy wine. And my wife, that's what, I mean, she's comfortable coming to see you to do that.
She's awesome too, by the way. I mean, I got to tell you now, she's like, I wish everybody was like Kelly, because she's so into trying like the opposite end of what's popular and fad oriented, which is like any other businessman. The wine industry follows fads. People try to experiment, but they're oftentimes pigeonholed to what they feel like is popular, and they don't want to deviate. Raquel comes in and she's like, "Yeah, give me something that's totally earthy and funky from anywhere in the world that is not California." You're like, "Oh, yeah. Awesome!"
And she doesn't want somebody that jammy fruitiness. She wants that dry, you know, not a lot of fruit. That funk is always a winner. She likes that. I mean, she likes those high altitude Pinots, things like that.
Yeah, and that to me is, you know, segueing into how food works with wine. And, you know, I think the reason why we're talking tonight, because, I mean, you guys are food, right? Like, so you guys are putting out flavors and your interpretation of what you feel like is going to be an exceptional menu item or a dish. And from the wine pairing perspective, the last thing you want is a big, fat, heavy, oaky wine with a majority of foods out there. Don't get me wrong. Those wines work with a certain set of foods, but you can't just drink over-oaked Cabernet with every dish that you're going to eat. You need acid, man. Acid makes the world go round. Acid makes your mouth water. And when your mouth waters, you taste food better. And so if you can find a way to progress into, like any good meal, you're going to start with, you know, course one, end with course five. Well, somewhere in between, you want to say, all right, well, I graduated from lighter, elegant, more delicate wines to more full-bodied and robust wines. And then you can appreciate what wine and food do together, because let's face it, you guys create food from a set of ingredients that you look at. You're almost like that show Chop, that you say, all right, well, I got to make this work. All right, I'll make this work.
I just want to chime in. That show Chop that I won. All right.
Yeah. Ah, I like that, Jeff. I completely forgot that you won. I knew you were on there, but now I know that you won.
You know, I just want to throw it in there.
And what did you do with your $10,000, Chef Plum?
I paid my credit card bill. It was amazing. I paid my credit card bill. That's what I did.
And they covered the one weekend in the Hamptons that you bought magnums of champagne.
It was a big night.
But forgot
man.
My number.
It was a big night. Somehow now I have three kids. I don't know. It was great. Whatever. I think it was.
That's funny. I got three kids too, and every single one of them was after a wedding, which is obnoxious because I obviously drink during a wedding. I can't go to weddings anymore. Otherwise, I'll have another kid.
I like your wife. I've met her. Please don't say things like that. That sounds terrible.
Well, no, I want to go through the process of trying to make another kid. It's the problem of actually having one and having to pay for it.
Now it's getting weird.
Gee, I roll in a very similar boat to you.
I'm not going to talk about you, brother. Listen, I can't wait. We're gonna do a dinner this summer with the three of us, and of course, G's gonna join us, so the four of us. So it's gonna be a wine dinner with food. It's gonna be an amazing opportunity to come out there and do some fun stuff. Dave, you still with us, brother?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, why don't you tell everybody where they can learn a little more about G and where they can find him?
All right, you can check him out on Instagram at GP Wineslinger, and he's the owner of Bottle Stop Wine and Spirits.
You know, gee, having five stores, man, and that's a lot of customers. And I know that, you know, I know the way you treat me when I walk in the store, and I can only imagine that's nothing special. You treat everybody like that. That's got to be really hard to maintain that sort of customer base and the way you treat everybody. How do you manage that?
You know, it's really as simple and as hard as having to do it every single day, one customer at a time. There's no way to shortcut it. There really isn't. And you know what? You're right. Like you walk into the store, you know, your hair does it. Like it's like your hair says exactly what your personality is. It's on fire. So like you could walk into a room and I know you're like, how should I say this? You're perpetual motion, dude. You're like the ball that just needs to be bounced, and it just does not stop bouncing. That's who you are. And I don't know if you know this, but when you walk into any room, everyone knows that about you. You just exude that.
Dave, but, is that true, Dave? Is that true? Or is G just being nice?
No, nah, there's some truth to that for sure.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, you're ugly as hell, bro.
Thanks.
But I will
tell
there
we go. Jesus, landed it.
Perfect. I will tell you that you've got plenty of character, brother. Plenty of charisma.
That's hurtful. But I think you do too. I think that's why you're so great at your job. I actually think Rob is fantastic with that, and I actually think Dave, as much as he would deny that, is the same way. Dave is a very large gentleman, but when he walks the room, he's a very loving guy, and you can see it when you talk to the guy. I think that what we exude actually plays really well into what our business is, especially in this day and age, for you working at retail, us being chefs from different levels. But when it comes down to it, man, when people come into the store, the way you talk to them, the way that you interact with them, the way that you know what they're looking for versus what they don't know what they're looking for is definitely impressive. What about when a guy like Dave, who is a fantastic, amazing chef, he does a great job, he's a hard worker, comes in, is having a date night, looking for a bottle of wine. Dave, what do you make on the date night? What's the dinner going to be? Tell G what the dinner's going to be. Give me three courses. Or just give me dinner. Just give me dinner for a date night really quick. Because I want G to pair it for you and tell you what this is going to cost you. Because G is the man when it comes to this sort of stuff. One of the things that G blew me away by was beating into my head that great wine doesn't have to be expensive, which we've already talked about. But you're going to make a dinner. It's a date night. You're going to go see G because you got to have dinner with the date. And tell him what you're going to make, because this is one of the things I've used you for before, G, is I'll text you a menu and say, hey, brother, I got a dinner coming up. I'm getting wine. Here's what we're making. And you just pair it for me, and I come pick it up, which is awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And those have been really fun for me, too, because, you know, you've always got awesome, awesome menu items. And I'm thinking to myself, man, I got to pair the wine with this, but I don't get to eat it.
We're going to change that very soon. This has not happened yet. But Dave, see, what just happened there, Dave, is that G and I bought you a few minutes to think about your answers, but now it's time to answer.
All right. I'd probably do like a salmon with some sort of citrus notes, like a white clam sauce, and then some sort of simple like pasta, olive oil and garlic, salt, pepper.
All right. So I think to myself, what's the big standout flavor here, right? So salmon's this nice fatty fish that's pretty bold with character. The citrus element, like, you know, anytime you got seafood, you know, no one wants to put cheddar on top of salmon. Everyone always goes for acid. So you say to yourself, man, that acid is really calling to me. I can go the direction of putting a white wine together with this and something that would be broad-shouldered enough to go with the salmon, but enough citrus backbone to stand up to the fact that you're using a citrus element in your dish. But you've also got that kind of earthy, funky, white clam sauce, right? So you say clams, man, and clams have got that gamey seafood character that can really dominate. So you combine that with the fat, and the fact that you're doing it over such a rich base with pasta and olive oil, there's a lot of mouth-coating flavors, especially with that fat. So I might say to you, would you prefer white or red? And if you said to me, I want to go in the direction of white, I would say, all right, awesome. So if you want to go white wine, I'm going to go straight towards drinking something that is an Italian white wine from the Piedmont area, Cortese. I want something that's got a good, nice, nutty, floral characteristic to the wine that is going to help bring a little more liveliness to the earthy, funky flavors. So I'm gonna look to be congruent contrasting in character. So those earthy, funky flavors, I want something that's a little brighter, a little more elevated to help match with the citrus, because I don't want the citrus to only be the only high pitched note. At the same time, a nice Gavi can actually have some medium weight to it, some body. So you got that mouth coating oil, you've got the rich salmon, you've got the fat from the salmon, and no doubt some cool flavors coming off that sauce. And pasta itself is a big texture. So I want something that's going to have at least medium body from a white and enough acidity and bright notes to help cut through all those earthy, funky components that you got going on. Now, if you said to me, nah, I prefer red, I never drink white wine, I drink red wine, and again, I need something that's going to be red. I'm gonna stick to something Italian because, again, you've got the clam sauce, you took a pasta, the olive oil. I think to myself, I want something that's going to be able to say it's coming from and connecting with the inspiration of the dish as well as the wine. So I'm going to go to Sicily, and I'm probably going to recommend what is a Terre Sicilian, Mount Etna Rosso, which is a bright, high-pitched red wine that's screaming with tannin but is really perfumed. And the reason why this dish can stand up to so much tannin, when you have fish, you never really want a ton of tannin because it makes a metallic taste in your mouth. But the amount of tannin that's in this red is really going to actually appreciate the fact that you've got the fatty salmon as well as the fatty elements from the olive oil, because olive oil is essentially a fat that's coating the inside of your mouth. So the tannins are really going to find a way to kind of cleanse your palate of that stuff. So tannin actually sticks to fat. And tannin, if you guys don't know what tannin is that drying component that happens in your mouth. It's not a flavor. You know, people tell you all the time, oh, I smell berries and I smell tobacco and I got this. When they talk about tannin, they are not talking about a flavor. They are talking about a texture, a tactile sensation, a coating on the inside of your mouth that happens. And with really tannic reds, they go well with fatty foods. And so this Mount Etna Rosso would be, I think, a good pair because it'll help pull away all the fattiness that you're going to have in this dish. The body of the wine is more medium bodied, and the acidity is nice and high still in it. So I feel like it's going to be a good pair.
Holy shit.
I would have just told them to lose the clams.
I mean, wait. Jesus, what you guys just saw right there, I did that on purpose. I wanted you to do that because if I go to him and tell him I'm going to make it for dinner, that's the shit he does to every customer in the store who does that. Isn't that fucking amazing? Like, he just broke the entire thing down right there. Boom. I mean, honestly, Dave, you just gained 20% more wine knowledge than anybody else, average Joe in the country.
Yeah, definitely. Now, I do have another question.
Oh. All right, talk to me.
Boone's Farm does not count, and neither does any box wine. Just saying.
You can't put ice in it, if that's the question.
Meads, are those kind of in the same classification as wines? Because I do drink a fair share of that.
Meads, so, you know, that's a really interesting subject and one that's really growing. You know, there's been a huge upswing in the appreciation of the honeybee over the past 10 years because people realize how important they are.
Yes.
But I'll say this, meads... meads need to do a little bit of work. There's a lot of good dry examples out there, but you oftentimes see the sweeter examples. A good dry example is a company called Redstone. So they actually put out this really nice good dry mead that you know, I'd throw in my fridge and drink it almost like it was beer or some type of sparkling wine, meaning that you'd have it in measured doses, you know, and you know, it wouldn't be it wouldn't be necessarily something that would be sweet or desserty. I mean, it's nice and dry, and it's got these rich flavors that are very biscuity and honey oriented. But you find yourself, you know, your mouth is cleaning out after a sip of it, versus the sweeter styles that tend to leave a cloying component because of all the residual sugar. I feel like if you were asking me whether meads are fun and interesting, yeah, I think they're awesome. My problem, I think, is trying to pair them with food because so the fun. Amount of sugar that's in there with a lot of the renditions that you see out, that makes it a difficult pair. So I'd probably focus meads in a pairing situation on the latter courses of the evening, specifically with something that would be dessert focused. And even, you know, not to say that I've done this before, but now I'm thinking I might have inspiration for my coming up weekend here. I would go salty. I would find something that would be salty to have with meads, because, you know, salt and sweet play off of one another, salted caramel, i.e. I would try and find a way to do something right. That would be a salted type of way to close out my night. So now that I'm even thinking about it, like even salty spicy. So like I'm Indian. I'm not sure if you guys knew that from my last name, Patel. It's definitely not Greek.
There you are?
yeah, exactly. But like Indians, we roast up a bunch of nuts sometimes and just sprinkle them with a ton of like spices and paprika pepper and then, well, you know, again, tons of salt, tons of spices. Like I've done desserts where I'm actually pairing tawny ports with cool shelled nuts and keeping the dessert focused around the beverage, and then some some stuff accompanying the beverage, I would probably find a way to do some cool meads with some spicy salted nuts.
Wow. That's a great idea. Robbie, you were saying, man, you were about to jump in there, I know, but like, you know, a mead and a salt sounds like a great idea.
I actually had that I think it was like last February or March at a friend's. He, same thing, busted out the meads. I think he had gotten them from a friend, made them possibly. I think they were a colleague or something of his, and he had did a whole nut, like it was just different. You know, I think we had like candied pecans and, you know, spiced pistachios. There's like 10 or 15 different kinds of nuts, with a ton of Middle Eastern flavors and stuff. And I had never had meads before, and it was pretty cool to end the night like that.
I want to point
that's
out,
awesome.
I was pretty sure what your story just told, I would have lost two bets there. One, that you remembered last February, and two, that you had any other friends besides me. I was pretty sure that I would have lost a bet there.
Yeah. I didn't say we're still friends.
Oh, okay, good. Good. I was about to ask you if you were going to ask G if playing the quarter game at the Montauk Yacht Club and beer go together, but that's not something we should talk about right now.
No, nobody knows what that is, man.
Yeah, I know.
That's you go home with bruises after playing that game.
Actually, Dave knows.
Yeah.
Dave was throwing some hard knees.
I didn't know quarter game was a contact sport.
Oh, gee. Do you know the game where it's the old school game from a couple years ago where it's like a shelf that moves full of quarters, and you drop a quarter in, and it lands on the top shelf, and as the shelf moves in, it slides said quarters, if there's you land them properly, off onto the bottom shelf, which then another shelf then pushes more quarters into the winning slot. You ever seen this game?
I have not seen this game.
All right, well.
I thought we were talking about the game where you're throwing quarters in the cups of beer.
That's another idea. I usually get mad, just throw a whole bunch of quarters and hope for the best. Hey, listen, yeah, I want to ask you. We're getting close to Thanksgiving time here in November coming up, and you know, it's that time of year for Beaujolais Nouveau, which I think most wine people have a love-hate relationship with. I remember when I was working in my wine world, you know, people bought the hell out of it for the holidays. Can you talk a little bit about that and what it is and why it's a thing?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know what? In France, in France, what they do every year after they harvest the grapes in, you know, end of September, early October, specifically in Beaujolais, which is a region that's in the southern end of Burgundy. But in my opinion, you know, they consider it part of Burgundy, but I don't consider it part of Burgundy. I think it's its own little entity. It's just north of the Rhone, south of Burgundy. And so what they do is they celebrate the harvest of the Gamay grape by crushing a bunch of the worst versions of it, right? Like, so the crappiest vineyards, they end up crushing, turning into wine, which takes, you know, 3 or 4 weeks to end up turning into wine. And then they bottle the stuff and they basically party with it. They're celebrating the harvest. And it's really that the first wine of the year, because it literally got made in about a month. And, you know, of course, like all great things consumer facing, the marketers got to it. Right. So like somebody said, hey, we can make a couple of commercials and sell this to people if we tell them how awesome it is and why it's happening. And so it became really traditional here in America to consume a bunch of Beaujolais on Thanksgiving Day, because the wine gets released the week before it. It's always like the third week in or the second week in November. And so the wine gets into America. Wine stores usually will throw a bunch of it on the floor. And then, of course, they're recommending that you should try it. And it ended up just becoming something where you have it on Thanksgiving Day. And truth be told, the Gape Grand Gamay is, you know, it's fruity, it's fresh, it's got good acidity. You know, and typically on those Nouveau versions, the tannins I was talking about earlier are going to be really low. So it works with a whole host of foods. So it just became something where, as Americans, we kind of accept it as being Thanksgiving wine.
Right.
The truth is, though, that's the worst example of what Beaujolais is. So, you know, it's not really representative of the region. The region itself is actually home to a lot of awesome kick-ass winemakers that are doing a good job within their little kind of sub-districts. So there's what they call crews of Beaujolais. So the best sites and the best little villages within the greater region. And that's really the fun part of Beaujolais. So, you know, I look at this like, you know, you chicken, egg, which one came first, right? Like, so the fact that Beaujolais Nouveau exists is because there are primo vineyards where they would never think about crushing it, manufacturing it into wine, slapping a label on it, and sending it out for the world to consume and celebrate. But the American marketplace gobbled up that whole thing, where they sent us their worst wine product that is literally just meant to be a token of celebration.
Wow.
But from that, Americans built an entire appreciation for the region of Beaujolais.
Doesn't that just sum up America? We just take the shittiest thing and exploit it.
But here's the silver lining to all that, dude. Like, Beaujolais now is such an awesome region because they had the economic output to say, hey, at least America will buy our stuff. And now, you know, like anything else, there's the learning curve. So we went through 10 years of, probably like 30 years of drinking bullshit Beaujolais. And now we're drinking good Beaujolais because they realize, hey, we're going to sell it to anybody. We can convince them that at least there's a better version of it, right? You can't convince someone there's a better version of something unless they're buying the worst version of it. You
right.
know what I mean?
Right, right. I mean, that's all it is. I mean, you got to know the bad before you know the good, right?
100%.
That's what I think. I mean, shit. Well,
and it works with Thanksgiving Day, man. Think about the flavors on Thanksgiving Day, right?
Right.
Like, I in my house, we have a whole host of foods, but I talk to folks all the time, right? You're talking about turkey and stuffing, and I've got this side and that side, and even if it's super traditional with some cranberry sauce and a couple of other things, it's really all about the stuffing and what type of stuffing they're making.
For sure.
And you know, you take the bird, right? Like, bird. It's really simple. There's really not a boatload of flavors, which is why most people need to smother it with gravy, right? It's really all about everything else that's on your plate, and that white meat, that turkey is a great centerpiece for it, but it's really more of a blank canvas for everything else, right?
I think so. Turkey can be delicious, man. Please go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that. So turkey delicious, but it's really not boasting with flavor, right? If it's delicious, it's much more subtle with flavor, right? Mine so is. It's right. Well, all right. So you got to make me some turkey, dude. You got to stop being a turkey and make me some turkey.
Oh, there you go, taking shots.
Gamay works with it.
It's fine. Sorry.
No, Gamay works with it. You know what I mean? So you know the flavor profiles of Gamay in general, which is the grape that is part of what makes Beaujolais.
It's fucking Kool-Aid.
It works with it. Yeah, exactly. It's juicy. It's fruity. It's fresh. It's fun.
No, people think it's fun for the holiday times, man. So I'm with it. Dave, tell people we can learn a little bit more about G being out here tonight, man, before we get on with our next fun game I want to play.
All right. You can check him out on Instagram at GP Wine Slinger and stop in at one of his shops, Bottle Stop Wine and Spirits.
There you go. So listen, I had a fun game idea I want to run by you guys. Hopefully we can play this. So I, of course, Open Table, opentable.com, they do their list of 100 of the best restaurants for 2017. Obviously, 2018 hasn't come out yet. So what I wanted to do here is read off a couple of their menu items. And in very short, thinking Twitter, gentlemen, I want to have the three of us say what we would pair them with, and I want G to tell us where we're wrong and what he would pair it with. That'd be kind of fun, right?
A little bit of pressure. Let's go.
I mean, listen, your pairing could be like, I want to put Miller Lite with it, but you know, but think really hard about it as a chef as to what you would put with it, and then let's hear what a sommelier would put with it. I mean, what if that sounds fun?
Sure, I'm in.
I like it.
All right, here we go. So, of course, I went to number one according to Open Table, which is Alina in Chicago. Fantastic restaurant. Never been there. Hope to go there soon. But amazing restaurant, and I've got some of their menu items up here, so I want to read one of them off, and I'm happy to start unless one of you gentlemen want to start.
Now you can take the lead there, Chef.
All right, here we go. So one of the things they have here, which is off their main menu, all right, I'm saying again, main menu, is an Anjou pear with onion, brie, and smoking cinnamon. All right, and that's obviously it's clearly a vegetarian style dish right there, for someone who isn't going to have meat. I'm going to take that. And G, don't chime in, or should we have G chime in after we each say something, or no? What do you guys think? What's fair?
Yeah, let's hear after.
But after everybody's done.
Yep.
All right. So, gee, you might need a pen to write down what I'm going to pair. I don't know, whatever. I'm going to pair that actually with a white, and I'm going to go with a something with a little bit more acidity and a little bit easier, kind of little grapefruit notes and things like that. I'm going to pair that. I'm going to say grape variety, by the way, just so you guys know. I'm going to take that with a Sauvignon Blanc. That's where I'm going to put that. I'm going to do an Anjou pair with onion, brie, and smoking cinnamon with a Sauvignon Blanc. Robbie, what are you putting that with?
To be different, I mean, I do agree with your choice.
Rob's
but,
like, Merlot.
That's why he wanted to go first, because he knew he was going to take the good one.
Yeah, I know. I mean,
well, you can agree. It's fine. You can agree, and then we could both be shot down by G. It's fine.
No. I don't know. I mean, well, first of all, I mean, it's got brie cheese, so it's not, you know, it's not
the
vegan.
Cocktails, beer, meat, liquor, everything.
No, I mean, I think that, you know, the citrus goes well with it. Maybe I think probably a white, definitely something with high acidity because of the cheese. I think the brie would dominate that, and then
a grape varietal. You can't just be like, oh, high acidity. That's fucking random. Come on, I'm gonna go
with the San Giuseppe.
Sauvignon Blanc. All right, I like that. Dave, you've got lots of experience in the business, but you're a little bit younger than Robbie and I, but you still have tons of experience. Much respect for that. What are you gonna pair with that?
Has to be a wine, right?
No. No. Or whatever you want.
Oh. I'd pair it with a bourbon.
Ooh. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. G, if you were to pick for the pairings, who's correct, who's incorrect, or what do you think is the best pairing here? And what would you do?
All right. So I definitely like where your head was at, Plum. I also think that, you know, that's shooting fish in a barrel when you consider
God damn it.
Anjou pear, onion brie, and like cinnamon. Like, yeah, all right, let me go for Sauvignon Blanc.
You made me feel good at first. You made me feel good at first, then you fucking kicked me in the balls. But that's great.
Well, all I'm saying is, I mean, you totally dicked over Robbie and Dave.
Well, of course. Well, they told me to go first.
Actually, you know what? I retract that statement. You gave them an opportunity to go first.
Thank you.
But he did research this.
Not at all. This just happened right now.
You didn't just decide to play this.
I swear to Christ.
That's funny.
Then you're going to.
That's funny. This is how chefs do one another in the kitchen. I can see. I can see how this is all unfolding.
It's not
right?
Pretty. It's not. But I do find. I got to be honest with you. Dave coming with a bourbon is kind of interesting because I think that would work.
So here's the deal, right? I like where all right, so let me finish up my thought with you. Plum, you said Sauv Blanc. You know, you think of Anjou pear. Anjou is actually, you know, a cool region in the Loire Valley. So, you know, Loire Valley does Sauvignon Blanc well. I would definitely go in that direction. But, you know, Robbie wasn't wrong. I think you said – what did you say? San Giuseppe? Pinot Grigio?
Yeah.
Is that the
– Yeah, like a
right.
Pinot.
Yeah, so, you know, lots of good tropical fruit. So, you know – the thing that is missing from the San Giuseppe Pinot Grigio thing is the fact that you said San Giuseppe. I mean, did you say San Giuseppe or did Chef Plum?
I didn't say that. Come on, I'm not gonna pigeonhole myself.
So, if you just said Pinot Grigio, I could have even stretched to it being Pinot Gris, and you would have won. But bourbon, I like. But I would have it as a bourbon cocktail. I would no way have like a glass of bourbon on the rock. Having this dish because it's just, you know, the Anjou pear is delicate, the onion sweet, brie mouth coating, the cinnamon spice. I would want something that is going to be a little easier to drink because I feel like this is a dish that's going to be, you know, in the earlier rounds of your evening, and so you want a drink that's going to help you stay in for the long haul. You start drinking bourbon and drinking bourbon and having Anjou pear, onion, brie, and cinnamon, and
we're having,
you know, yes. Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. That's right. You better hope there's not another wedding in town.
There it is. Hey, this is a fun game. I love this game. All right, next dish. And does anybody else want to go first this time after I read the dish or no?
No, you can go first, buddy.
All right. Steelhead roe with coconut, curry, and yuzu. I'm going to go a little different. And I'll say it again. Steelhead roe, which is steelhead trout, which is in the trout family, also sometimes considered a salmon, steelhead. A steelhead roe. with a coconut curry and yuzu. And yuzu, of course, is that very umami kind of flavor, that kind of soy umami flavor going on there. But yuzu is actually a citrus plant, which is interesting. So citrus from the yuzu is interesting. But to me, I think of soy when I think of yuzu. I don't know why. I think it's salty. I'm gonna go a little different here on this, and I'm actually gonna go a California Chardonnay that is oak Chardonnay, because I want those heavy buttery notes to kind of not counteract the citrus notes here of the curry and of the course of the yuzu. I want to go side by side with that fat from the coconut and the course of steelhead. Robbie, what are you doing?
That's a tough one.
That's why I picked it.
I'm not really digging that dish, so I would probably have a vodka and grapefruit.
That's a cop out. All right, Dave, what are you doing?
I have no idea.
You went last. You had the most time to think about it.
That doesn't mean that like I've come up with anything in between. I kind of do like the direction with the vodka because of the robe, but. Yuzu. Like yeah, yuzu, man. I don't know. I think. Notes? Yeah. You could do like some sort of gin cocktail, actually, because the yuzu and then the salty and then the juniper and everything.
All right, G. You're the judge, brother. Where are we at?
All right. So this is an interesting one because, you know, you got the steelhead roe, obviously fish, but, you know, yuzu and coconut curry. I think, you know, in this scenario, you know, one of the tried, tested, true kind of rules of thumb when it comes to pairing wine and food or just drinks and food is that you go with the most dominant flavor. You don't necessarily need to go after the protein or what is you know what it is that you're actually chewing on. And here I think you actually go after the coconut. Ooh,
more than the curry.
I think you go with the curry because the curry is probably going to represent be in every bite of the dish, right? So the yuzu is going to be there, but the coconut curry is going to be a really sweet, opulent, spicy flavor. And so when I think of that, when I have spice, I want sweet. And so I got to give it to Dave.
Ooh.
Because he said gin cocktail. And I feel like there's a gin cocktail waiting to be had with this because gin has got a really nice high-pitched, you know, aromatic character that's going to match up really well with the yuzu. And if it's the right gin cocktail, even to be honest with you, I was thinking straight up, give me a Negroni with this. So like, you immediately had it, Plum, with the Cali Shard, and I thought that was a good pick. But I think a Negroni with that dish would actually be a fun way to drink things because, you know, you figure Negroni's going to have some of the sweet, bitter components. I think Dave wins, man.
How the fuck does Dave win? He didn't say Negroni. Fuck Dave.
But he said gin cocktail. He said gin cocktail. And I got he gets bonus points for just being off the wall.
God damn it.
But that's bullshit. He was vague.
Oh, he was vague. That was nonsense. I think he's Dave, are you paying G?
No, man.
I mean,
he inspired me. I'm gonna go make a Negroni now. He said gin cocktail. Now I want a Negroni.
Alright, so G, I've already kept you too late, but I want to do one more of these. Is that cool?
Yeah, man. I got nothing but time for you guys.
Like, come on, this is ridiculous. This is actually crazy fun here. All right, you ready? So they apparently have a dessert that they call white chocolate, and it's with strawberry, English pea, and lemon. So it's a dessert, gentlemen. White chocolate with strawberry, English pea, and lemon. That's all the menu says. I don't know what that means. I don't know what it looks like. I don't know anything else. It just says white chocolate with strawberry, English pea, and lemon. Number one, I want to point out I probably wouldn't. I think I would order it because I would be like, what the fuck? You know, but it sounds a little creepy to me. I don't know. I think with this, though, with the white chocolate, strawberry, English pea, and lemon, you know, I'm looking at the citrus notes here from the lemon. I'm looking at the umami from the English pea and, of course, white chocolate, which isn't really chocolate in the real world, but we'll call it white chocolate, which is fine. I think with this, I'm actually going to go a little Pedro Jimenez sherry. I want a little 2-ounce shot of Pedro Jimenez sherry to go with my white chocolate, strawberry, English pea, and lemon. Robbie, what are you doing?
I'm going to go with a coffee-flavored tequila.
Not bad. Not bad. It's a great, fucking great choice. God damn it. Can I change mine? Damn it. Dave, what are you doing?
No retractions.
No retractions. Dave, what are you doing? White chocolate with strawberry, English pea, and lemon, sir. It's a lot of mixed flavors there. That's some shit that would happen at your restaurant, by the way. That's some fucking weird shit that Todd English would do.
Shit, that one's kind of tricky.
Yeah, I would be pissed at him, too. Robbie and I would come to your restaurant to eat, and we bring G, and we'd order that. We'd be like, what the fuck? This is stupid. I would order it to make fun of it. It would show up, and it would be delicious, and I'd be so mad.
Well, I think... I think I would do something with, like limoncello and raspberry.
Fuck, that's a good idea. God damn it. G, what do you think, man? Again, it's a white chocolate dessert with strawberry, English pea, and lemon. What would you do, brother? And are we all wrong? Or is my answer the correct answer?
And no, I'm going to tell you. I can see where you're trying to feed me that you want the correct answer.
Right, is it a point for Plum here, or is somebody else get it right?
No, you know what? I totally dig the limoncello raspberry. I totally dig what you're trying to say. And that's cool, but I feel like it could be too lemony. Like, lemon dominates the palate, man. You get one drop of lemon on your palate and that's it. It's over. You're not tasting much else. So I like the coffee flavored tequila and the Pedro Ximénez. I'm kind of split between the two because Pedro Ximénez can be too sweet. And you know what? If given the choice now, you told me I got to have this white chocolate strawberry with English pea and lemon, and you told me I got to have something with it, I'm going to want a wine beverage, so I go with Plum.
Yeah, that's right, bitches. World champion.
Damn right. You guys didn't get me right. I got them all right.
But that coffee flavored tequila is pretty that's some hot stuff, and I think that the only reason why I didn't choose it is because I don't think I've ever had a coffee flavored tequila.
Well, that coffee flavored tequila,
that's pretty good.
That's some Brooklyn bullshit right there. That's what that is. You order that while you wear a snorkel and a face mask and a wetsuit in a bar. Fuck that.
Somebody's feeling amped about their win, I guess, huh? Yeah,
no, I just it feels good to be a champion. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, hey, man. Hey, anytime you can, you take it.
Damn right. That's what's up. That was kind of fun. Hey, Dave, tell them where they can find more about G before we get him out of here.
All right. Once again, you can check him out at GPWineslinger on Instagram and stop in at one of his shops, Bottle Stop Wine and Spirits.
There you go. All across Connecticut, they're all up here. If you're up here for visiting for the holidays in New England, a lot of us come up from all over across the country, and you happen to be in the New England area, please, please, please go to Bottle Stop and check him out. G's there. His whole family does a great job. They got great people that work there. Check them out. They'll help you out, and they will give you the championship belt, much like G just gave to me. Robbie,
that's awesome,
Robbie, you lost. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, you've won this round.
Damn right. I won the fucking the war. I win. That's right.
I feel like you paid him off. This is your show.
It's not true.
This was your game. You didn't give us any kind of prep time.
Well, I didn't have any prep time either. I just looked it up and thought of it as G was telling us about Beaujolais.
You know, Rob, if you bought me a coffee-flavored tequila at the beginning of all this, I swear to God, you probably would have won.
You're getting one next time.
G, thank you so much for your time tonight, brother. I really appreciate it. I always love talking to you, man. You're such a great guy to talk to. You're so easy to talk to, which is why you're so successful at what you do. Before I get you out of here, man, with the holidays coming up, what are some people, some wines and things like that people should look for maybe all across the country that are a great price wine or a great grape varietal that can be great for them across the holidays for people who might be on a budget?
Well, I tell you what, the fact of the matter is with the holidays coming up, there's a whole host of different flavors on your plate. So go with wines that are more medium bodied, have moderate tannins, aren't too far extended in one direction or the other, have some acidity, have a touch of tannin, have a judicious amount of oak. So, I'm a big fan of Tempranillo and Sangiovese because they're good high acid reds that really work well with a whole host of different foods and, are rich enough to handle red meats, but they won't offend any white meats if they're put in the right plate, you know what I mean? So Sangiovese, red blends from Tuscany, from Spain, I feel like you're going to have fun with everything that those countries have to offer. And that's not to say that the regions of southern Rhone, France don't offer really good values too. You got to think of it as like this: where is the world's history in terms of wanting to casually eat and consume wine? And usually those parts of the world have been making wine that is meant to be consumed casually with food. And that's what they do. So that's the Rhone. That's the whole Mediterranean vibe right there. That's Italy, Spain. And you know, it's amazing. These are some of the oldest places in the wine world. And they still manage to produce some amazing values. So you don't have to spend a boatload of money. And you're getting, more often than not, a very thoughtful product. Something that has been made by a deliberate winemaker, not somebody that is... you know, he's getting paid to cook up a label and say, "Hey, we got to manufacture 10,000 cases of this for the summer."
Wow! Hey, gee, I know we're wrapping this up, but I do have a question that I didn't get to ask, and this is kind of on that topic: is how do you feel about the wines on tap?
Ooh, oh, awesome! I think that's a great question. I think it's awesome. To be honest with you, I mean, people really need to stop thinking about how they're coming across the consumption of wine, like so. Screw top. I look at wine and tap on tap as the similar question. It's a similar question to the wines that you find with a screw top, right? People say to me, "Oh, this wine's got a screw top. It can't be good." Why? Because the cheapest wines in the world 20 years ago came with a screw top. Well, beer comes in a keg. That's why people are afraid of wine in a keg. What I say is this: is that whatever gives you an opportunity to experiment more and try more is good. And you be the judge of you. You decide your own palate. And this wine on tap gives restaurants an opportunity to feature wine more regularly. And what I mean by regularly is they can go deep with it, right? If you put a wine on by the glass at a restaurant, you're going to say, "All right, well, I bought a case. Every bottle's got 5 glasses, and I got 12 bottles, so I got 60 glasses that I got to churn through, and then I'm done with this one, right? And maybe I find something new." Well, if you buy a keg of it, well, now you got to really do a good job of talking about it and engaging your customers and getting them excited about it. So wine on tap, in my opinion, makes restaurateurs have to sell wine. And selling wine, you know, even though the word sell is in there, the word sell isn't always a bad thing. Because more often than not, it's selling is about properly educating and then asking someone for money in exchange.
Well, yeah, here's the thing. So, gee, we got to go to dinner. My wife and we had a double date one night. Our friend, Chef John Brennan down in New Haven. You've met John. He's a great
chef. Oh, yeah, Chef John. Yeah, he's awesome, man. Great that guy's
guy,
talented.
Man. Incredibly talented. One of his restaurants, Olives and Oil, has 16 wines on tap. And we had him on the show last week, and he was talking about how, you know, he doesn't have just, you know, he acknowledged, and Robbie, you remember, he acknowledged, he said, "Oh, we got shit, you know, there's shit wine sometimes people think are on tap." He's like, "We get really good stuff on, and we put it on tap, and people don't understand that it's amazingly great wine. We do great flights of it and stuff like that." But he has 16 on tap down there. How awesome is that?
No, that's brilliant, man. Chef John's, number one, he's an awesome guy. So, you know, if he's putting 16 wines on tap, he's bought it. He's bought in. He knows what it's about, and he knows he has an opportunity to, this is another business side of things, right? The first person in is usually the person that's most rewarded for their efforts. And so this guy's throwing 16 wines on tap. That means he's going all in on wine on tap. And, you know, truthfully, it's all about changing classic misconceptions about our industry. That number one, wine has to be stuffy. Number two, it's got to come with a cork. Like, let's change all that shit. You don't need any of that stuff to really understand and know wine. What you need to know is that if you've got a glass and someone's willing to pour you some, what you need to do to figure out whether you like it. And after that, the world is yours.
Hey, listen, we're running really late here, and I apologize, G, but you brought up something. You got to give me 30 seconds on cork versus screw top. Give me the lowdown.
Dude, do you know 1 in 12 bottles is the rule of thumb? That when it's closed with a cork, that shit has gone bad. 1 in 12.
Wow.
Why?
So in the case of wine, one of them is bad.
Yep. And that's because the cork itself became tainted with a bacteria called TCA. I can't even say the full name of the compound that ends up tainting the wine, but it's called trichloroethylamine or some shit like
that.
Holy shit,
that was pretty good right there. That was pretty fucking impressive.
Yeah, it's not. It's trichlor. I just Googled it. It's trichloronosyl because I thought to myself, I had to figure out what this is.
Yeah.
So trichloronosyl, some shit like that. I can't even, I'm reading it right now and I can't pronounce it. I'm looking at the word. This is way too much. But bottom line is, it smells and it, you know, makes your wine smell.
I think we should have Dave try to pronounce it. That might be fun.
It tastes like a wet basement. It tastes like your dog just came in from the rain. Oh. Or like, you ever go through old... Yeah, it's terrible.
Ass.
It tastes like shit.
Thanks,
exactly.
Thanks, Robbie.
It tastes like shit.
Just bringing it in, you know, keeping it real.
Just ass.
You know, when you're experimenting with wine, you know, when you're exploring and going through the journey that is wine discovery, which, you know, I liken to food so much. People have to understand what they enjoy in terms of flavor and what they don't. And as they're doing that with wine, they associate brand so much to it. So if I give them XYZ bottle of red, they bring it home, they pop the cork, and I had done a good job, in my opinion, of filtering through their preferences, what their budget is, and everything else. And I made a very educated recommendation. The producer of that wine did such a good job of trying to make a successful product, labeling it in a way that people would draw attention to it, or it draws attention and gets people to pick it up off the shelf. And they priced it just right. And all of a sudden, this fucking cork screws it all up. Ugh. Dude. It fucks up my reputation, the winery's reputation, is people don't know that this bacteria or this compound exists, and it ends up infecting your wine like any other type of bacteria, and it ends up making your wine taste like this, and it happens like any other bacterial infection in parts per million. So if it's like under one part per million, no one can really taste it. No one can smell it or taste it. Once it gets past one part per million, I think it is, then the sharpest of palates can start to detect it. And then once it gets into like 3 parts per million, the average palate can very much detect it. And so let's say you're somewhere close to 1 part per million. If you're just a consumer of wine and coming into the wine store looking for help and recommendations, and you try this wine and it smells like a dog just took a shit in a wet blanket, guess
Jesus
what?
Christ. That sounds terrible.
You're going to say to yourself, wow, this guy is not really good at recommending wines at this wine store, and or XYZ Winery is not a good manufacturer of wine. You know what I mean? Like, so now both our reputations are tarnished, when really, if you just grab the next bottle on the shelf of that same exact wine, you'd probably love it. So guess what? Because at those prices, in my opinion, because of under $20-$25 – consumers are not aware of this bacteria and this infection that happens with wine called TCA, that if you have a screw top, you won't have to deal with it, and none of us have to worry about a tarnished reputation.
And screw tops aren't a bad thing. So in a nutshell, the short story here, screw tops are not a bad thing. Screw tops actually can be amazing.
It's freaking brilliant, dude. I mean, it saves you having to worry about popping the cork on Thanksgiving Day if you bought a couple of bottles of wine. You know, my house, we need like 3 cases of freaking wine on Thanksgiving.
Out of control.
Right. But some people that only go home with 3 bottles, right? Like, because,
which,
you know, they've got
some... any sense. Like, they bought wine for me. That's all. They bought wine for me
yeah,
and for Robbie
exactly.
and Dave to have a glass. That's what they did. Because each of us get a bottle, basically.
Bottom line, and you put a straw in it. You don't even need a glass at that rate, right? So, my opinion, that when that person goes home and they have one bad experience with the, you know, 30% of their evening, then they're pretty pissed off. They're pretty disappointed. And you know what? That consumer doesn't need to deal with that. Why? Because we can't put Stelvin or corkscrews on top of a bottle of wine. You know, the old guard needs to get over it. You know what I mean? Stop thinking that, hey, good wine has to come with a cork. Doesn't have to be.
Fucking money right there. That's what's up. We're joined right now. We're gonna get G out of here. But Jeff Barazzi is driving. Chef Jeff Barazzi is driving. Jeff, good evening. How are you?
Jeff, are you listening too?
You can hear the echo. He must be going through a bad service area. Well, listen, G, you're the man. We appreciate it. It's been a fantastic conversation tonight. I could talk to you all night long about wine. I thought Jeff was going to chime in with a question here, but I guess he's in a bad service area. He's driving from Southampton to New York City. Dave, tell people where they can learn a little more information about G and where they can find him on Instagram.
You can find him on Instagram at GP Wineslinger. and stopped by one of his wine shops, Bottle Stop Wine and Spirits in Connecticut.
One of the most inspirational guys when it comes to wine and business itself. The man does a phenomenal job. So, G, we appreciate your time tonight. Thank you for coming on and breaking it down for us. It was awesome. Robbie, it was great, right?
Yeah, man.
And you want to come on here and talk bad about that and like disagree with everything you said, and here you go. Like, you're awesome.
Yeah, well, he beat me to all the, you know, he made fun of you, so I didn't really have much to do.
That's the key. That's the key to success, is making fun of your host right there.
Hey, listen, as the last professional broadcaster, I'll take that. It's fine. As long as everyone's getting along on the show, I'll take the heat. It's fine.
Well, I got to listen to you guys more often. You're boosting my confidence like you wouldn't believe. I don't know how I'm going to get to bed now.
Gee, you're the man, dude. We really appreciate everything that you came on here and the knowledge you broke. And I hope all the young culinarians are paying attention. All the young food people checking this program out. Even the young front-of-the-house people who work in the restaurant business, who we've seen a lot of response from. Gee is the man. Please feel free to reach out to him. You might learn something. You never know, but we appreciate it. Gee, thank you for your time tonight, brother. Seriously, and I look forward to seeing you here. Listen, we have one more question, but... Well, I know they keep.
No, people... talk to me, bro. I got nothing but time, like I told you, man. I'm here for you guys.
Well, you have a business, keep hired. You bring people on, and you try to run a business here, and I totally understand that. But you know, is that one of the hardest parts about your business, is keeping great people in the building?
The hardest part of my business is, I would say, twofold in terms of people, finding great people. That's the problem. I feel like I don't think enough people recognize there's opportunities in the world of wine. You know, I think there's so many great chef facing channels, right? Like, so you won Chopped, right? My daughter watches Chopped and wants to be a chef, but my daughter watches Top Chef and says, "Wow, this is awesome." I don't think enough people realize that there really is an entire cottage industry within the hospitality space that's centered around wine and liquor, and that we need professionals in it, because ultimately that's really what drives my business forward, is that we're very professional with it. And so when I do find somebody that is got a lot of knowledge, my greatest problem is really keeping them focused on the consumer and not making things feel stuffy. You know, that's the problem, is people try and turn this into being stuffy, and you know, everyone's guilty of it. I'm not saying that, you know, I've never done it. You know, maybe I did it by accident today by talking too much about a grape or a style or a region, and you know, my bad, because, you know, I made someone's eyes glaze over. But really, you just want to, I mean, keep it fun, dude. Most people are walking out of my store because they want to have a good time with a bottle of wine that they drank. Just so keep it fun while they're looking for it. I feel like professionals that know how to do that in our space is what I struggle with finding. Does that make sense?
Makes 100% sense. I think so. Robbie, what do you think? You hire people?
Not anymore.
You've outsourced the hire?
Yeah.
That's what I'm working. Oh, yeah, there you go. That's the best way to deal with it. You are your own master.
Hey, you're preaching the choir here. Gee, thank you so much for your time tonight, brother. We really, really appreciate it. You are the man. Always love talking to wine with you and talking business with you. Much love and much success for you for the rest of the year. And you know, you'll see me in the store for sure.
Oh, yeah, you'll probably be there tomorrow. We open at 9, so that means you're going to only get about 8 hours worth of sleep.
God damn it. You have other questions, but I can't answer. I can't do that right now. Gee, we appreciate it, man. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you on down the road, all right?
Yeah, thank you, guys. I really appreciate it. Robbie, Dave, great meeting you guys.
Yeah, good meeting you.
Nice meeting you, man. Good night. Cheers. Happy holidays.
Thank you. You guys, too. Enjoy.
All right, there he goes, guys. The one only G. Patel. What a great conversation that was. Robbie, you were coming in. You were coming hot, and like, you wanted to like be negative guy, but you kind of can't help it when you hear the guy talk. I told you, he's a great fucking talker, isn't he?
He knows his shit, man.
Damn, right, he does. It's a little bit impressive when you hear the guy talk about wine. I'm like, fuck. I mean, I think I know a lot, but this guy is impressive.
Yeah, I still think the game was rigged.
The game wasn't rigged. I just can't. Dave, tell him. I just can't.
I could hear you text messaging him.
Not even true.
You're the only one who could contact all of us via text message. Down the road, we all need to be able to communicate freely on the outside. Now you're like, what would you do? Texting him on the side there.
I just sent him a text and said, thank you for being a part of the show. But yeah, I think it was a lot of information there. I think it was actually really interesting when we played that game to hear the different dishes and how we would handle it, and then hear a guy who was a certified sommelier how he would handle it. I think it was very interesting.
I think kind of what I took away from it was that none of us are wrong. You know, it really comes down to preference and what you
Dave
want.
Was wrong.
And
Dave was wrong.
Nah, I got one out of three, man. So, you know.
Okay.
I'm in the game.
Staying alive.
Right.
Dave is the Cleveland Browns of wine pairing. That's what he is.
No, listen, man.
Didn't the Steelers, like, tie with the Browns?
No, we beat them. We beat them this past Sunday. Go fuck yourself. Don't bring up history.
Oh man!
Bring up bullshit.
I think you're beating down Dave a little bit, but
I love Dave.
I gotta tell you, he didn't go with the wine pairings, but he did go with the newer, younger chefs and the next generation is doing those artisan cocktails.
Yeah,
you know, mixing wine spritzers and
he threw fucking mead in there, dude.
Yeah. You know, so he's Dave is doing exactly what G was saying. He's not keeping it stuffy. He's thinking outside the box and he's running with it and it works.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what we need to take away from it is that whatever you like to drink, whether it's beer, wine, you know, the artisan cocktails, you know, there's a way to pair it with whatever you know you're doing and you know the different notes and hints of flavors and the different acidity levels and all that stuff, it just carries through with, you know, all beverages and all things that we're pairing food with. And the more we can get people drinking everything and eating different things, and it's only going to make our lives that much easier.
You know, and honestly, this show, we've run a little long tonight, and that's fine because we're allowed to do that. But, I think it's great when you have a guy like that come on who, you know, you hear the guy talk about wine, you hear the guy talk about, you know, how it doesn't have to be some... I guess what I'm looking for here is, like, you hear the guy talking, like, it's not super expensive wines. It's not, you know, oh, you got to spend $45 a bottle, which is, I mean, you know, expensive or not, that's still a lot of money. You don't spend that to have a great bottle of wine. Wow. It sounds like we all just got swept away by the wind stream there.
I feel like I just got in a car accident.
I just got like splashed by a huge puddle from a bus.
That's a good point. We're joined right now by our friend, the one and the only Chef Jeff Perazzi is now with us. Jeffy, we love you, buddy. How are you? What are you doing?
Just parked my car. I'm walking to my apartment. Whatever.
Were you checking the show out at all while you were on your drive?
No, I was not.
Good. Good, thanks.
I was trying to, but it was cutting out, and I was getting frustrated, and I couldn't get in, so I was just listening to music.
Well, we had a great wine conversation there, and we did some wine pairings and whatnot with a really cool guy.
Oh, nice.
And it was great. It was a great conversation, but I knew you were trying to reach in and chime in with us, man. How important is wine to you when it comes to food?
How important is wine to me? I mean, it depends on the client, really. I mean, if the client is really interested in drinking wine,
what the fuck? Does anybody else feel like Jeff is in a lightsaber fight right now? What the fuck is happening?
That's a garbage truck. Welcome to Manhattan.
Did you win? I mean, fuck.
He's teleporting to his apartment.
Seriously?
Just driving. I had to park like a block away because the other garage is painting or something. So they're like, oh, sorry, bro. Like, bro, don't throw me. Let me park here. Then we're bros.
Don't throw me. Now, the best was I love in the program tonight, which you missed, Jeff, was listening to Robbie throw a couple of digs into Dave as the co-host. That was kind of fun. Dave, did you catch on to that or no?
I think I might have caught a couple things, but, you know, I let it slide. I mean... Who has their own theme music?
We can't even hear this because Jeff is walking through New York City right now, and he's
we're all walking fighting, through New York City right now.
I'm back. I'm inside now.
With the echo?
But Dave, you did a great job with the plugs tonight. Ron, what do you think? He did good, right? He wrote that himself, by the way.
That's awesome, man. Well done, sir.
Thank you.
We're gonna keep it positive. We got to start practicing the positive thing if we're gonna get on that TV show.
Thanks. 6 weeks. Oh,
man.
Yeah.
Thank you,
Jeff. I want to point out you added a ton to the show, man. Thanks for joining us.
No, happy to be here.
There he goes. His fucking phone's breaking up. There goes the funny part with Jeff is you guys haven't called.
He's in the elevator.
Dude, you call Jeff Barassi on his phone. You only catch every other sentence when he talks. It's fucking hysterical. I love the guy, but goddamn it. listen, I think you guys both did a fantastic job tonight. It was great to have you guys both on at the same time. Seriously, Robbie, great chiming in there. Dave, great with the plugs.
Hey, did you do good?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. You don't think so?
I didn't hear him.
I thought I hung up on you. Are you still here?
Yeah.
I swear to God, I thought I hung up on you. You won't go away?
You can't get rid of me like that.
God damn it, Jeff. All right, I just hung
you
up
gotta
on
play
Jeff.
His outro music.
I just hung up on Jeff. Let's see if he comes fucking back somehow. This fucking guy. He's coming back. It's gonna make me laugh so much. Maybe it's a Skype issue. I don't know. Listen, here's the thing. I think it was a lot of fun. I think it was very fun. I enjoyed having this conversation with G. I enjoyed talking to you guys. You guys both did a great job. It was great. So, and again, when Jeff gets his phone back working, maybe we'll have him on or maybe we won't. But he was
I'm on, for fuck's sake.
Why did you think I started laughing? I was like, oh, he's back.
God damn it.
When Jeff gets his phone together. Come on.
This is the third time I've hung up on you. Really? You're not going to go away this way? You're going to keep going back?
I just don't understand why you keep hanging up mid-conversation. That's kind of hurtful. I've been trying to get on all night.
I love you.
Whatever, that's cool.
The positive TV network isn't going to cover the Navy thing if you keep being mean and hanging up on everybody.
That's hurtful. That's not even public knowledge yet. What are you doing?
No one's listening, man. We're in your basement.
Yeah, true. No one's listening. Number two in iTunes. Yeah, no one's listening. Fuck you.
That's awesome.
Jeff?
What? You don't like the sound effects?
He knocked over his sous vide machine.
Oh, can you hear those? Can you hear those there? Because when I do my sound effects... Sometimes you can't hear them on the line, but
there he goes. Unfortunately, we lost Jeff. I don't know what happened there. We lost him. I don't know. I wish we could have kept him with us. It's imperative lost Jeff again. Hopefully he'll come. That's the third time I've hung up on him. I hope we figured that out. Dave?
What's up?
I spelled your name appropriately on the Instagram post today, and I'd like some comments on that.
You spelled it wrong.
What? No, I didn't. It was perfect.
No.
It was perfect. What are you talking about? BORTNAM. A perfect spelling.
Nope.
What? No. Have you ever thought that maybe you spelled it wrong?
No. I mean, I spell it right. You know what? You do spell it perfect. You spell it perfectly wrong.
What? No. That's bullshit, Rob. Come on. Bortnum. Spell the word Bortnum, Rob. Bortnum.
I'm not much of a speller, but I'm gonna go with he knows how to spell his own name.
I don't know. He's from Detroit. You don't know that for sure.
No. See, you just a couple weeks ago, you got to be like, oh man, you're out in New England now, so you're not.
Dude,
you know,
you got to go with the positive thing, man. Again, with the negativity, man.
Is it negative?
This isn't gonna work, man. You can't be beating up on Dave like that, man.
I feel like the little brother now, and you guys are arguing. You're like, just leave Dave alone. And Plum's like, fuck that. I'm going to pick on him all I want. And then Rob's like, oh, man, he's cool.
I didn't say cool, but I just said that, you know,
see,
that's
exactly.
Not cool.
Little brother shit.
Yeah, he's ripping on your, like, state and your education system in that state. And, you know,
I don't know if he said anything about the education system. I mean, it's fucked, but
he
still.
He said
it's
from Detroit, and that's why you don't know how to spell your name.
Oh, so, damn. See, I missed that. He might be on
He might be right.
Right, yeah.
I don't think I'm right.
I mean, you totally spelled my name wrong. No, my name, you spelled it wrong.
I didn't spell anything wrong.
We've been friends for, you know, a long enough to, like, at least know how to spell each other's names.
Dave, you are incorrect. I am right.
No. No, sir. I mean, you were one letter off. I can give you that.
Did you do it on purpose, Plum?
Dude, I'm starting to think he is.
No. I text Dave and said I'm very confident I spelled your name correctly, and apparently I didn't.
No. I didn't even respond to that text. I looked at it. I was like, fuck, he did. No, he didn't.
Holy shit.
See, what you should have done was not answered his call.
Right.
And then chimed in with a, oh, were you looking for, and then spelled your name the way he spelt it. And then been like, but this is, and then spelt it right.
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure, like, David Bortnam, that motherfucker doesn't exist at all, like, anywhere in the world.
he does.
No, he does. All I got, Rob, is like, he's out there somewhere.
He's out there.
He's on the show right now, right?
No. He works in Reno at a different casino.
Oh, shit. Reno Dave.
I'm a little annoyed that Jeff just texted me and said Dave's right. I am a little annoyed at that, but...
See?
There you go.
Told you.
Well, listen, you gentlemen, I want to thank you both very much for your time this evening, coming on the program and hanging out with me and helping talk to our buddy G Patel. Dave, tell him one more time where to find G before we end the program.
You can find him on Instagram at GP Wineslinger and check out his shops. Crap.
Sorry. No, that's not what they're called.
the shops are not crap.
It's Bottle Stop
Wine and Spirits.
There you go. Bottle Stop Wine and Spirits all across the North. If you happen to be up here visiting family for the holidays, I highly recommend checking them out. Bottle Stop. They do a great job. G, his entire family. H is his brother. They do an amazing job. Please check them out. Love those guys very, very much. Good brothers. They definitely fall in the category of good brothers, gentlemen.
Definitely.
There you go. Good brothers. I appreciate them being on the show tonight and G being on the show. Robbie, thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir.
Dave, thank you very much, sir.
Thanks for having me on. Anytime.
Ladies and gentlemen, please remember food is one of the most important things we have in life. Everything important in life revolves around food. See you guys next week. Peace.
Why are we arguing? If you just shut the fuck up for 30 seconds, you might learn something.